Hey everybody, I'm Robert Yerby, and I'm an insurance professional, and admittedly, kind of an insurance nerd. My friends and family tell me that nobody is going to want to listen to a podcast about insurance, so instead, on this show, I'm hoping to share a story or have a conversation with a guest about some relatable experience, and then show you how insurance impacts that story or topic. My hope is you'll enjoy a few laughs with me and maybe learn at least one interesting thing about insurance along the way. Here we go. Hey, everybody. This is Robert. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I am going solo today, and I want to go back to similar to what I was talking about a couple of weeks ago. I want to go back to teenage years. I was living with my dad when I was a junior and senior in high school, and I slept in a loft. Like I didn't have a bedroom exactly, you know, with four walls and a door. I had the loft, and I recall my parents stayed up later than I did. You know, if I came home from work at, let's say, you know, 10:30, they were still up. I'd be tired. I'd be like ready for bed right away. They'd still be up like watching the news and stuff. And like, you could see the lights from the living room where I was sleeping. I mean, I'd put on headphones when I was in bed and like listen to music. So I wasn't hearing them and their conversation and the news and all that stuff. And them doing dishes or, you know, just, it's not that they were loud. It's just, I didn't have four walls. So my routine when I would get home was, yeah, put headphones on, climb in bed, and I'd fall asleep with the headphones on. Also, at some point, the over-the-ear big earmuff headphones, that's what I was wearing when I was, you know, a teenager in bed. At some point, those fell out of favor, and those were not cool. They were not common for a lot of years. And then they came back, and I see people again with the big over-the-ear headphones. And now, as I'm recording this, I feel like the more popular headphone listening device are the AirPods, the little things in your ear. But maybe I shouldn't even make that statement, because I don't really know what's cool or not or whatever. But imagine me laying in bed, over-the-ear headphones, falling asleep like that. And I grew up in Naperville, Illinois, early 90s, I was in high school. And at that time, there was a radio station called Y108. And Y108, I think, was like Latin music during the day. But at 7 o'clock at night, this excellent, excellent DJ named Scott Loftus had a show, and it went from maybe 7 to midnight. Like he worked, and then maybe there was an over the like middle of the night guy. I'm not sure, but from 7 to midnight, Scott Loftus, Y108, Rock Chicago. That put me to sleep Monday through Friday. And one day, I'm falling asleep, and I hear a song from a band I had never heard before, okay? And I was into hard rock. I've mentioned, you know, time and time and again on this show, you know, Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, Suicidal Tendencies. And on Y108, Scott Loftus played all of that stuff and more. And he played a lot of, like, you know, what you might call, like, deep tracks, too. It wasn't just Enter Sandman and Master of Puppets and, you know, Peace Sells. It was all sorts of stuff. And to me, as a, you know, 17, 18 year old kid, new stuff, getting exposed to new stuff. And so one day I got my headphones on, going to bed, and I hear this.
Someone got themselves a letter in the mail the other day.
Right? You might not have ever heard that before. It's a band called Sabotage. And that is a song called All I Bleed. It's off Edge of Thorns. And that was relatively new music at the time that I was hearing it on Y108. Zach Stevens is the vocalist. Phenomenal vocalist. And the band mixes piano and, you know, heavy distortion guitars. And, you know, there's definitely heavy songs from Sabotage. And in fact, that song, if you let it run for a couple of minutes, it gets heavy. Maybe I'll skip up to that, one of those parts. Yeah. And anyway, that's how I found Sabotage. I want to say, you know, in my head, thinking back 30 years or whatever that is, I want to say it was like a week later, I'm still listening to Y108, Rock Chicago, Scott Loftus, and I hear another song, Hall of the Mountain King. Now, you might know Hall of the Mountain King as that classical, right? Well, Sabotage takes that and, you know, made it super heavy, and then they made, you know, a song called Hall of the Mountain King and, you know, create lyrics. And that's super cool. It doesn't sound anything like All I Bleed. It's nice and heavy, super cool song. Anyway, not going to play that here. Look it up. You might love it. That band Sabotage, I got super into those guys. And sadly, I want to say they were coming to play a Chicago show at the Metro, if I'm remembering right. And their guitar player, Chris Oliva, died in a car accident in Florida a matter of weeks before the show. And so I never saw Chris Oliva. I did see Sabotage at least once. I want to say on that, much, much later, the Wake of Magellan tour, maybe in like 98, 99, somewhere in there. But the band, They were really into rock opera, beginning with their, well, actually, I'm not going to pretend to be like a Sabotage historian. I don't know exactly when or how they got into, you know, that sort of genre, but they like these concept albums where the songs on the album tell a story and you listen to them all in succession and, you know, it's like a Broadway show, but rock. And Sabotage, I think, you know, did an excellent job of melding together, you know, soft tones and keyboards with really heavy rock. And they had a change in vocalists from John Oliva to Zach Stevens. And they're really different, vocalists. Both, I think, really good. But their rock opera thing that they did, the first one that I was super familiar with was an album called Streets. And I'm looking at that now. I've got the CD in my hand. And it looks like it was released in 1991. There are songs on this album that I absolutely love, beginning with the last tracks, Somewhere in Time and Believe. I actually had my karaoke spot load up these songs. Well, Believe anyway. I had them load them up so that I could sing them there. These are obscure songs that wouldn't appear at your typical karaoke spot, but my guy downloaded them so I could sing there. I love them that much. This album, however, meh. I mean, I don't love it. And frankly, I think one of the reasons why I don't love a lot of these songs is it's a rock opera. And I think, yeah, as much as I love, you know, those two tracks, Somewhere in Time and Believe, I don't love the rest of this stuff. I think when they try and tell a story, the lyrics suffer. If I were to look at the band's albums where each song stands on its own and doesn't have to be part of a larger production and story, I think those albums are better. The album that they released right after Streets, Edge of Thorns. Phenomenal album. absolutely underrated album. I can listen to it beginning to end. It's one of those, beginning to end. I love it. Streets, I mean, I go right to the songs that I like. There's parts of Ghost in the Ruins that I like. There's a couple of things. If I Go Away, that starts with piano. I like that one. But frankly, I mean, I can just click all the way to the end of the album and just listen to those two ending tracks. And you know, they put out other rock opera concept albums after that. The one a few years after where it's all about like Sarajevo. There's a couple of decent songs on there. No, I'm not even decent. There's a couple of good songs on that album. Most of it, I don't want to listen to. You know, when I was a little kid, I liked Mary Poppins. I liked Annie. I think I even liked Sound of Music a little bit. Those are musicals, right? Same idea. The movie. I mean, I didn't go to the plays when I was a little kid. I saw the movies. The movie's full of music. It's a hard knock life. For us. I sang all that stuff as a little kid. I knew all the songs, knew all the words. I'm not going to say I did the dances. I didn't, but I knew all the words and sang the little songs when I watched the movie. It was nice. It's just fun when you're a little kid. As an adult, I can't stand musicals. Now, I've been married 3 times. My first wife, I took her to a musical at the Performing Arts Center at Michigan State. I want to say it's called Wharton Center. Best recollection, I think we saw Miss Saigon at Wharton Center. We didn't go because I wanted to go. We went because she wanted to see it. And I'm just a fabulous husband. So we went. And I remember not liking it really at all. Okay? And so we never went to another musical, her and I. My second wife also loved musicals. And so we went. I think the deal that we had was we would go to a musical once a year. And oh my gosh. You know, there's trade-offs when you're married. You know, you just kind of go along sometimes and do what your spouse wants to do. And I did that. And I tried my best not to show that I hated it. But I really, really didn't enjoy those things. We would go downtown Chicago. We saw Wicked. We saw Rent. Rent was like, man, I mean, those were two of the worst hours of my life. I just cannot overstate how much I disliked Rent. And we saw some others. I think when we went to New York, we saw the Rock of Ages, which, hey, ain't she sweet? She wanted to make it easier for me and figured, hey, if they sing like some Bon Jovi songs and Whitesnake and stuff, hey, that'll make it easier for me to swallow. Yes, it did. I still didn't like it. I forget what other musicals we went to while she and I were married. I think we did go almost once a year for a stretch. I just don't like them. And I think it comes down to, you know, I like plays. I definitely like live theater. I like plays. And I love live music. I don't like musicals. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I feel like they're trying to blend the music with the story and the acting, and both end up suffering. I imagine it takes a supremely talented person to be both an excellent actor or actress and a great vocalist and, you know, dancer and performer. You know, there aren't a lot of five-tool players in baseball. There aren't a lot of guys that can hit for average and power and throw and run and catch. I mean, I don't know how many players there are in Major League Baseball. There's hundreds. And how many five-tool players are there? A handful. And isn't that what you need, you know, in your musical? You need a bunch of five-tool players. And because there are so few of those people, you end up getting 1, 2, 3 tool players in your show. But even, you know, the production itself, okay, because the performers aren't the ones that are writing the music, right? They're not writing the lines. We have the writers doing all that. I feel like the work suffers when you're trying to just jam all of these square pegs into round holes. And wouldn't it just be better if we just tell me the story where people don't have to sing and dance, just act. And wouldn't the music be better if we just got like the best music written where you didn't have to like make stuff rhyme that tells a story? Like, just gosh, sing the song, play the guitar riffs and or play the piano or whatever you do. I don't like having to mix these two things that I think are different enough that it just doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me. I don't like it. You know what else it reminds me of? And I looked this up in advance. You remember that old McDonald's hamburger from the 80s? Don't know why that I remember this. I think maybe my mom liked to order it when she took us to McDonald's. But the burger where they had the hamburger meat on one side of like the styrofoam clamshell thing, and then they had the lettuce and tomato on the other side, and the whole shtick was, you know, keeping the hot stuff hot and the cold stuff cold. Actually, I dug up the commercial for it on YouTube and was surprised to learn Jason Alexander from Seinfeld, he's in the commercial. Let's check this out.
You say you're getting tired of lettuce and tomato hamburgers in this town that don't quite make it?
Yeah!
You say that just once you'd like your hamburger hot and your lettuce and tomato cool and crisp all at the same time?
Yeah!
Well, I...
All at the same time. That's hilarious to me. Yeah, they had this burger and the old styrofoam clamshell things. It was laid out so that they didn't put the cold stuff with the hot stuff until you were ready to eat it. So like if you got it at the drive-thru, like you could, I mean, I don't know. They obviously still don't have that. Maybe it didn't work so well. Maybe they found people don't really care. The people that are going to McDonald's don't really care that much. Anyway, all right. So I know I'm not alone in not liking musicals. Okay, can I say that too? There's a lot of us out there that just don't like music. People that like music don't necessarily like musicals. Anyway, so what does this have to do with insurance? Well, okay. Just so happens, I got a phone call recently from a friend of mine. And a lot of times, friends and family, they give me a call with questions about insurance. Yeah, go figure. And so this friend of mine, she had recently met with an insurance and investment advisor, and she was pitched a product, and she just wanted to run it by me. It was a permanent life insurance product, what I'll call a variable universal life product. And these products, if you're not familiar, they blend life insurance with some investment features. Okay, it's got some of the premiums that you pay get invested in some what they call sub accounts. They're invested in equities. Okay, for the sake of simplicity, let's just say, you know, mutual funds. Okay, and she wanted my take on it. Now, there was a time when, it's going back a long time, 1998, 1999, I did have a Series 6 license and at the same time an insurance license. So I theoretically could have sold variable universal life policies. I didn't. I was so young, I really didn't have the market for that, you know, the contacts, I guess the network that would, you know, be a good fit for those products. All my friends, you know, that were 22 and 23, they didn't have any money. And if they needed insurance, term life insurance was because kind of what we talked about. But anyway, what do I think about variable universal life? You can probably guess. It sits with me the same way that musicals do. I don't really love that we're blending insurance protection with investments. Bundling things is all the rage in insurance these days. In this case, I don't like it. I love the idea of protecting your family with life insurance. I'm pro life insurance. Definitely. I'm also all on board with investing for your future and your retirement. I just don't like pushing these two things together because I think they both suffer. A lot of times what happens is people can't afford as much protection as they might need when they want to get into a permanent life insurance product. Okay. Somebody that has a young family and they're 25 years old, they got, you know, two or three kids and a wife, and you know, they need a lot of life insurance, and the premiums are always going to be higher with permanent products. The term life product is going to be a cheaper way for them to get the protection their family needs. Would it be great if they could be saving some money and investing for their future at the same time? Yes. Yes. And I would do that separately as their budget allows. I think the protection for that, you know, group that I'm just talking about there, the young family, I think the protection is primary. Whatever you can do to work in some savings into your budget, that's great too. Do that separately. Also, I'm not down on permanent life insurance, whole life, and that can be, again, very expensive. It has its uses. Can envision a scenario in which I might recommend that. There's no investment component to that. There's other options for permanent life insurance where there's really not a focus on investments and in, you know, yeah, growing, you know, a retirement nest egg. Maybe you're getting a higher return than you might with your whole life because of different policy engineering. I'm not an expert on those products. I'm gonna leave it with, I don't love the idea of mixing investments and insurance. I think those are two very important priorities, let's say, but I prefer them be done separately. Similarly, mixing mortality underwriting with morbidity. And that shows up where life insurance policies are offering living benefits. So, for instance, I have a critical illness insurance policy. And basically what that is, you know, if I get diagnosed with any number of different awful diseases, I'm going to get paid a lump sum benefit. And I can use that money for whatever I want, but presumably I'll use it to pay for treatments or expenses associated with treatments or replacing income, you know, if I can't work because I'm too sick. I also have life insurance, and there are some products out there now, and I feel like they're gaining in popularity, whereby you buy the life insurance, and if you get sick, you get diagnosed with a critical illness, you'll get paid, again, a lump sum, just like I described with my other policy, but it comes out of that same life insurance policy, and then your you know, death benefits are reduced accordingly. And people think, hey, that's a great idea. You know, I need both of those things. Let me just get one policy that does both. But the underwriting for mortality is different. It's different than underwriting for illnesses. And it's different enough that I just don't like blending those policies. There's a trade-off, of course, you know, because there's other living benefits you can get. There's long-term care coverage. And hey, people need long-term care. There should be more people looking at and purchasing, protecting themselves with long-term care insurance. And people say, Robert, isn't it a good thing if they can get their long-term care coverage some way? Maybe it's with this life insurance product. Isn't that a good thing? I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose so. But you got to understand, like, that the underwriting is so different. I'm trying to underwrite a long-term care insurance risk, you know, a life insurance risk. I mean, that those are so different. And we're just lumping these together in the same policy. I have a couple concerns. Number one, how are the companies going to do when the claims start rolling in? Are the policies designed adequately and underwritten well so that the companies aren't going to suffer and be upside down when the claims really start rolling in? Now, maybe there's probably some companies that have been doing this long enough. They've got a long track record and a lot of data on it. And that's good. That's exactly what we need. Full disclosure, I'm not an actuary. But I have a sense of understanding of what it is that they're doing. And I know that this is tricky. I can definitely see companies screwing this up. My other concern is that the policies are going to be complicated, and the salespeople that are pitching these won't understand them well enough to educate their prospect, who then won't understand them well enough to know what they're buying or how to use them. There's other examples of mixing mortality and morbidity underwriting, and you know, it might show up in, you know, say disability income, for example. But I'm seeing it a lot with long-term care and this, you know, critical illness stuff. And I think people could benefit from critical illness insurance. I think they can benefit from long-term care. Definitely more people should have life insurance. And maybe the bundle is just the simplicity gets more people into it. I think it's a lot like musicals, though. I really do. In a perfect world, we'd go to a play, we'd go to a rock concert on different nights. But I guess if we only have, you know, one date night, because it's tough to get a babysitter and we're trying to please everybody or find a little bit of something that everybody likes, maybe we end up at a musical. I don't know, but I'm not happy. I'm not happy at all. And I feel the same way about some of these life insurance products that are out there now. So watch out. Watch out. Ask a lot of questions. If somebody's pitching you something like this, ask a lot of questions. All right, that's all the time I have for today. I'm going to leave you with this. I know a lot of you are looking to support the show, and I appreciate that. The best way to support us, if you are a licensed insurance adjuster or producer and you need insurance continuing education, check out our website, bmfce.com. Don't need to take any tests. Just listen along to the webinar. It's a lot of me talking about insurance stories. And obviously, if you're not a licensed insurance producer or adjuster, you just like the show, leave us a review. All right. Write a little something up on Apple, or, you know, give us 5 stars. Tell your friends. Yeah, you don't even have to do it on the app. Just tell your friends, hey, check this guy out. Forward him a show. All right. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. Thanks, everybody.